3, 2, 1. This is the Insiders Podcast.
Had you invested in Aurora in the early days when we came onto the market with a value of 10 or 20 million, you'd have been doing very, very well by now. And certainly people who invested when it went to 14 billion are significantly underwater. But this whole industry corrected itself, not just Aurora.
The man, the legend, Terry Booth, joined me to talk a little bit about Aurora and a lot about his new venture called Australis. But the question is, should you invest into his new company? I'll just let Terry try to explain why he thinks you should. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Insiders Podcast.
I coached my son's hockey, Nick. Nick is now 29 years old, and I coached hockey for 10 years, right from the little tiny guys to Bantam.
Okay.
A great part of my life, actually.
Are you a hockey guy then?
I do. Obviously an Oilers fan, and maybe Chicago as well. But yeah, big time hockey fan. We've got seats now for years. We go to the games. We're missing it this year, obviously, but look forward to getting back to the Rogers place.
Yeah, well, I'm a Canucks fan, but I'd say in the last decade or two, it might be more depressing to be an Oilers fan, all things considered.
We could debate that all you want.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm so sorry that you're a Canucks fan.
All right, so let's jump into weed, shall we? You left Aurora about a year ago. I know that you've been busy with Australis, and I guess things became official this year, but what would you say you did with the bulk of your 2020?
I think it was certainly relative to cannabis in one way or the other. We were, as you know, involved in that dissident battle, to some extent, with the Australis board. At the same time, we've been talking to U.S. cannabis companies. When I say we, I mean my group of people that stuck around, if you will, after I left, my EA and Roger Sykes and people like that. I opened a company that sells med PPE equipment back in Feb. It's med PPE Canada. That company is still operating, still running. We bought a big warehouse and got into the supply of that type of material. And at the same time, was hopping and bopping along on this Australis deal and talking to some companies about what they were interested in. I don't know if you know the whole story, but Alps, so the engineering and design firm that left Aurora as well, I joined a partnership in them. And I also am looking at the CBD drive from Ampspace. So very, very busy, busier than I've ever been. I think I retired for 6 hours. That's about it.
I've read countless times now and seen countless interviews with you where you've said the words, Australis is not Aurora 2.0. So how will you do things differently? What's the game plan with Australis?
First off, after 8 years in the cannabis space with Aurora, you learn a lot, right? You learn a lot. We were very much in tune with what was going on in south of the border, but we're not able to get in south of the border with touching the plant, if you will.
Yeah.
But that was really driven by the banking syndicate, and it was driven by the New York Stock Exchange. So we all sat by licking our chops, and we spun Australis out into its own company because we couldn't be involved with it. And the intention was to be an MSO. We had land in Washington, still do, had some land in Michigan through the deal with CanaMed. And when I say it's not going to be Aurora 2.0, I'm more or less saying we're not going to be building big facilities and operating them and running them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a large CapEx model. I think that, you know, you saw what happened in Canada with the oversupply of cannabis. It happens pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Still, Aurora has an excellent low-cost program, but you gotta sell it.
Oh, yeah, man.
Right? And I always say the cannabis industry today is as small as it's ever going to be.
Yeah.
Every single day. So it's still growing globally.
Yeah.
But it's not growing as fast as we all thought in Canada. So when you build these big, great facilities and you have a great low-cost program, you also have a high burn with the employees and then we get to 600 employees at Aurora. And that you have to maintain.
Yeah.
So that's what we're not going to do. We're going to be building these facilities with Alps, and we'll be hopefully signing agreements for low-cost biomass as a result of the build. We're not going to have, you know, 50% of their cannabis, but maybe 5 or 10 assigned to our brands. And the money really will be spent on building brands. And no one really has captured that yet. And, you know, America is a brand that you really have to expose yourself and get your cultivars on the shelves of these retailers. So you have to be licensed in the state. The Biden administration and the new Senate, very, very good news for the U.S. cannabis space and investors. And so we're pumped, Ben. And we get this Australis deal closed. We're hiring C-suite now, filling in the gaps up top, and certainly want to close the GT Therapeutics, with Duke Fu. He's presently the interim CEO.
Yeah.
And this Astralis deal, I expect, we put it out there. We wanted it closed yesterday, so it's upon us.
So you guys acquired ALP, Aurora Larsen Projects, and they're the company, I believe, that you guys utilize to build your large-scale facilities here in Canada. So the idea is you guys are going to set yourselves up in anticipation of the possibility of federal legalization, and now with ALP on board, you guys will be able to offer consulting and building services for other, I guess, aspiring LPs in the U.S. Is that kind of the idea?
Yes, and we're already doing that. ALPS is already down in the U.S. right now. Mm-hmm. We're going to be negotiating with some larger MSOs or larger licensed producers, if you want to call them, cultivators,
yeah,
in Arizona, California, and Nevada. And those, some of those we've signed and we have announced, and others we're in late-stage negotiations. So
yeah,
that's already happening with ALPS. What's not been tidied up yet with Australis is closing that deal.
Mm.
Once it's closed, I mean, it's a milestone-weighted deal. It includes me coming in as CEO.
Yeah.
It's almost like a first takeover, if you think about it. They're buying 51% of a company with 80 employees, and Astralis only has 8 employees or 9 employees. So it's going to be the engine that runs to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we close Green Therapeutics, we also have Mr. Natural brand coming in.
Yeah.
Lots of wheels moving right now.
So inevitably, you go back to, I mean, Aurora's behind you, obviously. You're on to greener pastures and new things, and also, the U.S., which has 10 times the population, so all kinds of different options for you. But inevitably, everyone's always going to, when it comes to you, compare this project to Aurora. And, I know a lot of people that have invested in Aurora who are, you could say, for lack of a better term, underwater at the moment. However, take a guy like me who is always looking for something to throw my money at. How would you assure someone like me, your standard retail investor, that this is something that I should take a careful look at?
I would say this. I don't know exactly what Aurora's market cap is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Last I checked, it was around $3 billion, maybe $3 to $4 billion. That's a sizable company.
It is.
Had you invested in Aurora in the early days when we came onto the market with a value of $10 or $20 million, you'd have been doing very, very well by now. And certainly people who invested when it went to $14 billion are significantly underwater.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but this whole industry corrected itself, not just Aurora. Many companies have gone down to 1/10 of their previous value, never mind a fifth.
Many.
Okay. So the difference with Astralis is you have the opportunity of the upside.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, it's a company that when we do this deal, where the valuation of Astralis is still below $100 million. The opportunities with the population in America, 10 times that of Canada,
mm-hmm.
far less restrictive on the ability to brand and sell and advertise your products. Packaging is less restrictive. Yes, you have this fragmentation across the states. I think that'll continue even under a decriminalized model. But the difference is population and the East Coast. The West Coast of America is pretty much, I wouldn't say spoken for, but it's...
it's developed, for sure.
Yeah, it's developed, still the Wild West. But that part of the United States, including British Columbia, have historically fed their cannabis to the East Coast.
Yeah, of course.
There's not a lot of gray market in the East, and the population bases are bigger. So that is where we're really looking towards having major opportunities. If you imagine Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, just those states alone are 80 million people.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's so much work to do, left to do in the States. Investing in Astralis now, in my opinion, with the quality of people that we're bringing in is a no-brainer. And our CEO is supposed to say that. Of course we are. But I believe in it. Absolutely, man. 100%.
You don't have a crystal ball. I know that. Perhaps you have connections that the rest of us don't have. Maybe for some insights, what do you envision as far as the rollout of federal cannabis legalization goes in the U.S.? Like, do you anticipate something happening in this 4-year term with Biden?
Yeah, I think there's a few acts that were proposed prior to the election run up in the Trump days, the Safe Banking Act, the MORE Act. Now that they were supported by Democrats, one was actually a bipartisan bill. Excuse me. When those bills go through, you're going to see a lot more activity, a lot more profitability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, imagine, if you will, having a business where you have to pay tax, but you're not allowed to deduct your expenses.
Yeah.
That's what the situation is right now in the cannabis space in the States. Just that alone changing will increase bottom lines, and those bottom lines being increased, they'll be able to grow their companies faster. And then, what about this crazy one? Putting your money in a bank imagine not being able to put your money in a bank.
Yeah.
Right? Through a bank. I mean, it's creative down here for banking. So those two things alone, regardless of legalization, mm-hmm. just those two things alone will boost the cannabis space, increase the ability to be profitable, and move the ball forward.
Yeah.
Legalization, like, are you kidding? That'll be a global event if the USA legalizes cannabis. So there, USA were the ones that wrote the 1971 convention against cannabis. I had all the countries join on board to say it's an illegal drug. It's a banned substance, controlled and banned on the same list as heroin and crack. That changing would be, I don't even want to talk about it, astronomical. When, even if they decided to do it, it would probably take a similar amount of time that it took Canada, which was 2.5 years.
At least.
Before you can fully, supposed to join on any corner in any state.
Fair. Are you hyper-focused on cannabis with Astralis, or are you looking at things like psychedelics and the CBD market, that sort of stuff?
CBD derived from hemp is on our radar 100%. And a lot of the work I did at Aurora, I got to know the CBD market in USA very well. And we are talking to CBD companies in USA. And I think it's a great question, because that'll happen before legalization of cannabis. Uh-huh. That the FDA will finally decide to say, hey, you know what, this is safe, you can eat it. When we can ingest, then that opens up your CPG industry.
It just seems to me like the CBD marketplace in the U.S. is kind of murky waters as it stands, because every Tom, Dick, and Harry has a CBD product for sale in the corner store or the gas station. So do you think that regulation is required in order for larger companies to put out safer products for consumers?
Well, certainly. And we know who have spoke about them. Mondelez has spoken publicly about it. The Oreo guys and Coca-Cola, Pepsi Cola, those large companies have spoken openly about it. But until approved by the FDA, they can't dip their toes in it.
Yeah.
The CBD topical space is also something that we believe in in a big way. The cosmetic space, we believe in a big way. We'll see what they come up with, whether it be a broad spectrum or an isolate, when they pull the switch on this. The WHO has said that they've only said that the isolate is, all these other minor cannabinoids and whatnot have not been through the test.
For those who are not as familiar with the U.S. Market as they might be with Canada, in Canada anyway, if you're starting a company like Astralis, I'd say you're already kind of a few years behind, if not more, to get into the game. Where do you see yourself in the U.S.? Are there a lot of established companies that you're going to have to compete with already, or do you feel like you're kind of ahead of the game starting right now?
Oh, we're behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
That's why the market has priced us accordingly. I would put us in an MSO3 category.
Yeah.
And there's the twos and there's the ones. The ones are all north of $1 billion market cap. But they're not that far away. It's not that hard to get there because of the market opportunities are opening up every week. It is truly a excellent opportunity to get in on a ground floor cannabis company. If you know what the hell you're doing, number one, we do. We know what we're doing at Astralis. But Alps knows what they're doing. We're not buying any Tonka trucks this time around either. If I learned anything, buying a distressed asset is a distressed asset for a reason. Uh-huh. And the cost to fix the distress is sometimes way, way higher than the cost you pay for the company. So you won't see any more of those, I hope, in Astralis. Well, I don't have ultimate decision. We do have a board.
Yeah.
We have shareholders and whatnot. But the other thing with USA, if we do get into any M&A activity, the number of companies is tenfold on what was available to us in Canada.
Yeah, and that in itself is interesting.
Yeah. So the critical mass that's occurring in Canada is in a small envelope. The critical mass that will occur in the USA has only just begun.
Well, if you guys are moving towards some form of legalization like we had in Canada, I mean, your perspective would be different from mine, but we're both people who are intimately familiar and passionate about the cannabis space. My question is, at the time, everyone talked about the scale of their operation, how big their facilities were, how many square feet, how many pounds and kilos of cannabis they could put out. And I think what we realized after legalization in Canada anyway was that all that size didn't really matter if the product wasn't good. And when you look at the U.S. now, is that something you're going to try to avoid in the U.S. with Astralis, or is that something you think that might make more sense with a population like they have?
Well, number one, those will not be our facilities. We're not getting into a cultivation large CapEx model with this.
You're going to consult companies that may ask for them though, right?
100%, we already are. If I pull you back to the Aurora days of what we were doing at the time, If we had not done any of that, we would have a small facility northwest of Calgary with 55,000 yep. square feet and probably have a market cap of 100 million bucks. Right. Okay, so you have to keep that in mind, that it is an amazing company with amazing facilities with an ever-increasing global demand that will eventually be exporting more too. Way more. Yeah. I think that this last, and that's nothing to do with just myself, but a number of key people left that organization, and they have switched gears to what the market is demanding, profitability. Mm-hmm. As you said, we used to get valued on the size of our vault. Then we got valued on for all the licenses in place. And we were valued on our square footage, our footprint, or our paid mm-hmm. footprint. And then we got valued on our patient counts and our top-line revenues. Mm-hmm. And the market developed, and as we all knew, it eventually got to this, you better start making some money.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And still not a lot have pulled that off. I think the path to profitability is easier in the United States by far for a cannabis company, just because of the sheer numbers and because of what we've learned.
Yeah.
Right. So if you focus on it, it's not a race in the States, not a land grab like Canada was. And eventually that yeah. went away. It's just something that you have to pick the companies and pick the states, know that you're in a friendly regulatory environment that's not, hampering your ability to grow. I wouldn't call it easy, but because of our experience in this space, we're able to acknowledge and accept the fact that we don't want to do yeah. certain things. And if you stay away from doing those in any business, you know that, if we just have a good, solid growth, EBITDA positive, cash flow positive, organically grow, we are publicly traded, we don't want to go to the market for money if we don't need the money. I don't think I'm not afraid to go get some money. I'm pretty good at that, raising some cash. So we're not there yet. We want to set the table first. That's why we're bringing in the execs. That's why we're doing the ALPS transaction, so that we at least start putting money yep. in the bank. This company was putting $20,000 a quarter
wow.
in the bank. So it's like, are you kidding? It needed this. It needed this change. That's occurred with this boy.
Well, I could say you and I both, from our completely different perspectives, obviously learned a lot from Canadian legalization. Even me looking at you now, wow, if I looked at your company 5 years ago, I wouldn't look at it the same way. But you see what happened there. You know what could happen in the U.S. and you go, okay, this could be exciting. And I'm really anticipating ramping up towards legalization should it happen there. I think it's going to be fascinating. And I think that all these Canadian investors who maybe made money, maybe did not, will do the U.S. The U.S. once it happens, and we'll all be smarter about it, including you. It's a very valid point. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts for wrapping up? Anything we missed?
Well, you mentioned something a bit ago too. It's about picking the right play as well.
Yeah.
You have to take your hat off to the U.S. companies that are continuing to survive over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
They're doing something right to just be here. A lot of casualties so far in the U.S. with companies. So when these other rules come about, there are going to be some diamonds here on an M&A front. We hope to be one of those, whether we're the acquirer or being acquired. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You never know. But we're going to keep our nose to the grindstone, work our asses off, and build a successful company. That is the goal. That is what I'm focused on.
Thanks for doing this. And it'll be interesting watching you work in the U.S. now. So take care. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, brother. Take care. Bye.
All the best, brother. Bye now.
Thanks so much to Terry Booth for joining me and Corey Hershue for setting this all up. You can find out more about Australis online, and their ticker is AUSA. Whatever you do, there's no denying that watching what Terry does over the next few years in the U.S. will be interesting. Hey, if you like what I do, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. And if you really like what I do, leave me a review on your favorite streaming app. You can follow me on Twitter @_insiderspod, or just reach out to me, michael@distinctmedia.ca. Hang tight, because my next chat is pretty cool and it's coming up soon. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Insiders Podcast. We do our very best to be as accurate as possible, but take no responsibility for inaccurate details or facts. If a topic interests you, we're happy to have brought it to your attention, but please take the time to research the details for yourself. To find out more about Insiders Podcast and all of the work that we do, check out distinctmedia.ca.